is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm Vanessa Lowry and your host for today's show. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work, the book they've written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. Our regular show host, Tim Morrison, is out of town at a class reunion, so I'm filling his hosting seat today. My co-host, Andy Lowe, is with me in the studio. In addition to co-hosting Right Here, Right Now, he's the host of Renegade Radio. Good morning, Andy.
Vanessa, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. It's always a pleasure when I get to spend a morning with you.
I know. I like it when Dr. Tim travels.
That's right. I do, too.
So let's make fun of him while he's gone. So he's having a class reunion. So you think they're still communicating with stone tablets there when they get there, you know, or do you think they actually have moved to paper now?
Well, I'm not even going to go there, but you can just take that up with him next week when he's back.
I'll just put it on the air. He'll listen to the recording and he'll call me. What was that all about?
That's right.
All right,
that's
perfect. Right.
Well, I'm excited about our show today. We're going to be talking about creating audio products from printed books and publishing a book to complement audio products that you might have already created. My guests are Diana Bohr, Walter Lawrence, and Sandy Weaver Carmen. So we've got a full slate today, and we're just going to jump right in. Diana Bohr is the best-selling author of 46 books published in 23 languages with nearly 4 million copies sold. Her most recent books are Creating Personal Presence and Communicate with Confidence. Her work has won an American Library Association's Best Nonfiction of the Year Award and has appeared on Executive Soundview Summary's list of 20 best business books of the decade. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. And, you know, you've written 46 books, which is kind of mind-boggling to me. How do you determine what your book topics are going to be?
Primarily by what problems my clients are having, because I've been in practice for almost 3 decades. So as I'm out there in the workplace and I know what my audience as a speaker and as a consultant, I know what my audiences are asking for, what challenges they face, and I think, I wonder if there's been a book written on that, or just something that I have an interest in, and I think this is a challenge that I'm running into, and if there's nothing written in it, and I need to know more about it, I get involved in the research of it, and I'm asking people how do they solve it, and there seems to be nothing on it, then I start researching it and finding an answer and turn it into a book. And then, of course, sometimes publishers come to me because they know that that's my area of specialty, communication, and they'll say, you know, what are you working on in this area? And then I know that that's an interest that people are asking in the bookstores for. And so there are a couple of ways.
So it's interesting to me that you let the potential readership of your book kind of dictate what books are going to, what the content is going to be that you write about.
Right. You know, a lot of times I hear, particularly novelists, but even nonfiction writers say, I write what I'm interested in. I write what I write for myself. I could never do that because I want somebody to read it, you
right.
know? And I feel like that it has to be need-driven. And that's what my agents have always said to me. They're saying, you look for a problem in need of a solution. And that's, if you want to sell books, that's where I think you should start.
Well, and obviously, if you've had 4 million books sold, you're meeting a lot of need out there.
Right. And bookstores frequently do call agents. In other words, they are now driving the market frequently. They know what searches are done online for online bookstores. They know who comes into the big chain, know who comes in and what they ask for that they don't have and that they do searches for. And so they will frequently go back to their buyers and say, we don't have books on these subjects. Those buyers, in turn, go to publishers and say, do you have books coming out on these subjects? If not, these would be good subjects. Those buyers, in turn, and they're networking with agents, tell the agents, we're looking for books on these subjects. Are you planning any? And then agents come to us, authors who know, who they know specialize in certain areas and say, how about a book on this subject? We've got bookstores asking for these. So that's how it drives backward. It used to go the other way. You know, writers just, you know, moved out on a farm in Vermont.
Right.
Threw out books. But it's working the other way. And it has been actually for the last decade.
Well, that's fascinating. And I am so impressed at how prolific you are with your writing. On Right Here, Right Now, we hear all kinds of stories about how authors create space in their schedule to write, because I know this is not your full-time thing. You don't write full-time. So can you describe your writing process for our listeners?
Well, I do what I call writing marathons, and that is I block out periods of time. I write very quickly. I mean, my graduate degree is in writing English, but with a specialization in writing. So I write very quickly. It's not like I'm a psychologist and I studied something else, but I studied writing. And so I love to do it, but because I have everything else, I may research a book for 5 years or 10 years, but when I sit down to draft it, I don't want to drag it out. I think the reason a lot of people don't get a book done is they, you know, spend, let's say, Saturday mornings for 5 hours, or this weekend, and then 3 weeks later they're writing for that weekend, and they spend half of the time that they have rereading what they wrote 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And then the next time they have a period of time, they're spending half their time rereading where they were. And the result of that is that they lose momentum. They lose motivation. The project gets stale. It feels old. It sounds like a different person wrote it because they're in a different frame of mind, a different mood, and the pacing's different. So there are all kinds of reasons it doesn't get done. But it's kind of like a diet for me. You know, if you're going to lose 10 pounds, you can do anything for 2 weeks. You know, you can deprive yourself of sweets or whatever. And it's the same thing with writing a book. You can keep a grueling pace for a short period of time. So when I write, I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I am sitting at the computer. I mean, I don't get dressed for the day. I don't exercise. I don't eat. I'm sitting at the computer at 6, and I might write till 9 o'clock. And then I get up and eat a bite of breakfast. And then I'll go back and write 2 or 3 hours and then get rest for the day. And then write 2 or 3 more hours and then maybe go out for a long walk for exercise and then come back out. And so I use the breaks that I need in my writing schedule for 5 or 10 minutes to do the functional things I have right. to do to exist and write until 11 o'clock at night. So I'm putting in 14, 16 hours a day, and I will do that 6 days a week for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and get the book done. And then you can sit back and in leisure edit. But you feel like, gee, the hard part is done. And you can edit in leisure, put it away for a month, and then go back, you know, let it cool off, and then approach it with an objective eye. You've kind of forgotten what you wrote. And then go back and edit and take out this and see what the pacing is. So it's a marathon kind of pace to get it down one time. And then you go back if you need to do other drafts.
So when you block out these two-week periods of time, obviously you have to do that early in your schedule, because I'm sure your schedule fills up very quickly. How do you do that at the beginning of the year, and you say, okay, I'm going to write 2 books this year and block out those 2 to 3 weeks at different points throughout the year?
It varies. Generally, there is a lull in the speaking and training business at the end of the year from about Thanksgiving to the first week in January. That's a slower time. So generally, I'm writing a book in that period of the time. And then generally in July, the last part of July to the first part of August is a slow time. So in one of those times, I'm going to be writing a book generally. And then you are promoting it while you're researching the other book. And then it's just a flip-flop where you're researching one and you're promoting the other. You're researching one and promoting the other. But it doesn't always happen that way, because I may have a out-of-the-country trip for 3 weeks and it throws things off.
Right.
But, you know, you just every year is different. But generally that's the time I write from the end of November till right up to the first of the year.
Well, and one of your most recent books is Communicate with Confidence, and you have a 15-CD audio product that companions this book. Can you tell me a little bit more about that audio product and how that came about as part of the book or to companion that book?
Yes, actually, that is a book that we have redone over and over and over. It first came out in 1994, and that was a huge seller. Several media people and reviewers have called it a classic in the work, which I was honored that they've done that. But the revised and expanded edition came out this past December, and it was completely redone. I added social media to it and a lot of new communication challenges since we're online. And that edition was expanded. It had 1,042 tips when it first came out. Now it has almost 1,300 tips with the addition of social media challenges and new technology. And McGraw-Hill first did it, and I have in the last, whatever that is, 17 years that it's been out, I have developed probably close to 40 different products off of it, audio products and video products and CD and DVD. Sandy Weaver Carmen, that you have on the show today also, has done some recording of books from that product. We did a DVD series of 14 different chapters. It has a chapter on everything that has to do with interpersonal skills. There's a chapter on listening, a chapter on resolving conflict, a chapter on being persuasive, a chapter on asking the right kind of questions, one on giving feedback, on coaching, on etiquette, on small talk, networking, just everything that you could possibly think of with interpersonal skills. And each one of those has a CD that goes with it. And then there are all kinds of e-books, just certain sections that apply to things that meet a small need that you can imagine. That book is massive.
Right.
It's just massive. So people, if they just have a specific problem or an issue, they don't want to read 100,000 words. That's the length of about three normal, typical business books today, or maybe even four typical business books, because their business books are getting shorter and shorter now. They're about, they average 144 pages. Well, that would make four of those books. So let's say somebody just wanted to know how to give an effective apology. Let's say they work as a customer service agent, and they're saying, I don't want to read the whole book. It's just that our agents don't know how to apologize well and get the customer to accept it. You might want just a little small ebook that's 20 pages. Well, then we have an e-service book that just talks about that. Or let's say you have a manager, supervisor that just wants to give great feedback. They have somehow they just don't do it well and they dread performance reviews. Then they just want a small e-book or an audio recording on that. Or Creating Personal Presence is the other book, that major business book that I had to come out in October. Well, we have an audio just on that. So anytime you do a major book, major work, you can turn it into all kinds of 30-minute to 60-minute, which are the ideal lengths, audios, DVDs, CDs, because people want it in all different formats. Some people prefer audio so they can do it when they're out jogging, exercising, and other people say, no, I don't want, you know, I'd rather see it. They want to have it in a different kind of product. You can do all those different kind of products once you do that major work.
Well, and I know people learn in different ways, too. And so some people are more audio learners and some people are more visual learners. And so, having it in multiple ways gives people the opportunity to learn in their comfort zone in the way that really resonates with them.
Right. And my concept is what I call the umbrella concept. The first thing you do is to create and research the most comprehensive piece of content. You want to become, not fake it, but actually become the expert in your topic area. And to do that, I think you must know everything you possibly can about a particular subject. And so you want to put that in the most comprehensive form, which is the book to date.
Right.
And then under that, you begin to excerpt other products, which might be a training course, a two-day course, a three-day course, and then you can narrow that down to smaller courses or an online course or speech or an audio product. The audio product might be a big, as Sandy does, a seven-hour audio book. It might be a 30-minute cassette on, not a cassette, I'm dating myself
right,
here.
A CD
just a small 30-minute recording. It could be a podcast. It could be a two-minute tip, like on my YouTube channel. I have narrowed it down where this book has almost 1,300 little page entries of 200-word tips. You can make those small video recordings, which I have on my YouTube channel. So there are just all kinds of ways you can winnow the content down into usable snippets that people get immediately what they want as they need it on the job or in their work or family life.
Right. Well, I think it's fascinating, and you've got such a great depth of knowledge that I'm sorry we don't have a whole lot more time to talk to you, but please, we're going to talk to our other guests and hopefully have time to open the mic so everybody can chat. But can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can buy your products and buy your books and find out more about you?
Sure. Our main website is Boor, just like my last name. It's like B, Boo Her. I always tell people, don't do that. It's Boo Her, B-O-O-H-E-R. Or if you are interested in the books, each of those have a website, communicatewithconfidence.com and creatingpersonalpresence.com. So either of those places, boor.com, communicatewithconfidence.com, or creatingpersonalpresence.com.
That is a handy way to get people to remember how to spell your name, Boo Her, even though you don't want
don't
people
do
to
it.
Say that.
Don't do it. She's a phenomenal speaker. Don't boo her.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, Diana, if you can hang out with us, we're going to, like I said, we're going to open the mics at the end and let everybody talk. So thank you so much for being part so far. So our next guest is Walter Lawrence, and a.k.a. T.W. Lawrence. That's the name he publishes under. He's a business owner and the author of Take Me to Texas, a collection of 12 short stories. His entire book has been recreated as an audio version. And the short story, Dusty, Lord, Show Me the Way, is being distributed as a free gift to Walter's readers and potential readers. Welcome, Walt.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I think this is a three-peat for you. I think you've been on the show with me once and with Tim at the Decatur Book Festival once, and then now you're back again.
Yes, that's true.
We're glad to have you. So we've got a little bit of a Texas theme going because Diana is calling in from Texas, and you write stories about Texas.
Yes.
So Take Me to Texas is finding a niche of readers. It's finding people who live in Texas as well as those like yourself who live in other states but at their heart remain Texans and are always going to be Texans. So why do you think Take Me to Texas resonates with so many people?
Well, there's two things to it. One, Texas as a concept is one of the... There was an article in Entrepreneur Magazine about 6 months ago, and it listed the top 10 brands that people recognized. And Texas as a state was like number 10.
Was a brand. Wow.
Yeah, so if you say Texas, people have an image. That's true here in the U.S., and it's true worldwide. People have an idea of what a Texan is. And so Texas sells. For me, it's a strong draw personally because I was born at the edge of the hill country. But more importantly, there was a professor of English at University of Texas. His name was J. Frank Dobie, who was very popular during the 1950s. He basically took tales that were common that people knew, and he wrote them. And he was criticized because people would say, you're just recycling stories that everybody knows. He says, let me tell you this. The story belongs to him who tells it best. And in the bookstore at UT, that saying is etched into the wall. And when we went there and I saw that, I said, that's exactly how I feel about it. So if what my ambition is to tell a very good story and let people enjoy it, I believe it's a very good story when they can be taken out of the moment and into the story and held there in that spirit of disbelief for the, 15 minutes or so the short story takes to read or now to hear. And then they come back and say, okay, that was worth the time I spent doing that.
Well, and I know they're fictional stories, but they have a little bit of autobiographical background to some of the stories that aren't immediately apparent to the readers.
Well, of the 12 stories, there are three of them that are based on experiences with my family, more or less loosely based. Several of them are conceptual. I had an idea. There was an event. I wrote about that. Dusty is the only one that I did not realize what the origin of that story was until it was recorded as an audiobook. And then when I heard it, I said, that's why it was written. Because I just sat down one day and just started writing and came up with this story. And then, of course, revised it. But when Sandy got Moby to record it for me, and the first time that I heard it, I remember it was on a Saturday morning. I was sitting in my bathrobe. I popped open the email, listened to it, and I cried.
Wow. It is a really powerful story.
Yes.
So I know you've had your whole book of 12 stories made into an audio audiobook. Why did you decide to do that?
Diana was saying, if you reach people in different ways, and one of the pieces of feedback I kept getting was, I'd like to listen to this in my car, because in Atlanta and other metroplexes we have such long commute times. Do you have it available, you know, as a podcast or as a CD? And the answer at that time was no. I could get a microphone and record it myself. But then I had met Sandy at an event and followed up with that, and then it became apparent. I had two choices. I could record it myself and go through that process, or I could let the professionals do it and take care of it. And once I heard the sample voices that they had, I said, there's no way that I'm recording that. So we let the pros do it, because it came out to be a very good product and worth listening to.
So you mentioned Dusty, and I want to talk about Dusty because it's one of the short stories that you're actually distributing as a free download for folks. So can you describe a little bit about the story of Dusty and why you've decided to distribute it that way?
Well, Dusty is actually the name of the horse in this thing, not the cowboy. After listening to it several times, I said, you know what? I never gave the cowboy a name. It's just the cowboy and Dusty, which is fine. But it's a story that basically is autobiographical, because the cowboy realizes that the cowboy way in the late 1880s had come to a close, and he was going to have to do something else with the rest of his life. And so he's on his journey to this mythical town of Cowtown, and he stops and he asks the Lord for direction. He gets off his horse. He prays and said, basically, you've always guided my footsteps. I'm asking for your direction this time. Please help me. Gets back on the horse, lets go of the reins, and says, well, Dusty, you know as well as I do, so take us to Cowtown. And so it actually is a metaphor of deciding, how do I go into the next stage of what I'm doing career-wise, life-wise, that kind of thing. What was interesting was about a week or so ago, I was at Richard Kirby's Bling meeting, which is a networking group of executives, some of whom are looking for jobs. And I handed out the disc to them, and I said, I didn't realize until now, but this is appropriate for job seekers, because you're all trying to decide, what am I going to do next? So the audience is broader than I thought. One of the interesting things to me is that the production of Dusty and the distribution of Dusty, it's very short. It's only a 3-minute audio, so it's you can get in and out very quickly. It's part of a journey that I have sort of stumbled upon. So I'm headed to Cowtown in my own way, and it has opened doors that I haven't expected and introduced me to people that I would never otherwise would have pursued. I've had people who have heard it and say, is this a Bible study, A? And B, and said, where are the other episodes to this story? To which I said, well, I've just written the one. They said, well, yeah, but you can write the others, right? And I said, well, how many would you want? Well, it ranges from 3 to 13, which is, so a lot of demand on that. But I've been working with some people who are very good at doing Bible studies and lead Sunday school classes, and they're going to help me at least pick the topical areas to write with.
So it's interesting that, just like Diana was saying, that her books and writing kind of come out of the requests of readers and agents and what people are looking for. A similar thing is happening with Dusty, that you're actually seeing opportunities for new product avenues and different roads that you can travel down because of just starting on one path with Dusty and starting to put it out there.
Right. But one of the just as a writer and personally, one of the things that has been very growth oriented to me is that the media going from printed word to spoken word requires a little bit different way of telling the story, because in the way that I write, it's very obvious to see who is speaking just by spacing it and indentation and that kind of thing, not available to people just listening to it. So it had to be structured slightly different, a few more he said, she said type of thing. so that people could follow it just from being told. But when we think about going back historically, stories around the campfire, there was no written word. So I've sort of come full circle now to telling campfire stories.
So it'll be interesting to see if that affects the way that you actually write stories in the future.
Yes, yes, it will. Because, well, so a lot of writers, when they're doing their critiquing, will read it out loud and see what it sounds like, but yet put it back on paper. This is just a continuation of doing that.
Well, and I know that you're looking for some specific types of connections to distribute Dusty. Can you describe what kind of people and what kind of organizations you're wanting to connect with?
The appeal of Dusty is the fact that it's basically a cowboy story, a cowboy and his horse. For example, I played the story to my grandson, who I discovered didn't know what a cowboy was. He couldn't identify.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, to which I was taken aback.
I'm sure.
Of course, he was not raised in Texas. He was raised here in Georgia. So, you know, what does one expect? But I have been actually going to hooking up with seminaries, and there's an outfit called Cowboy Church that basically where people attend church on horseback. So those are the venues for it. I see the audience as being more heavily in the West, in the Southwest. And so I'm just beginning to, you know, find what those avenues are.
So if any of our listeners have connections to churches or pastors in the West and Southwest, that would be a good thing for them to send to you.
That's right. What we've done, I've made it available just because it's part of what I consider my Christian walk to give away this story, because I mean it for an act of inspiration. So we set up a website called ProjectDusty.com. They can listen to it. It's actually a YouTube video. They can view it on YouTube. They can view it on this website. But on the website, if they like it, they can pull down an MP3.
That's great. Well, and tell them again how they can find the website.
It's ProjectDusty.com. One word.
That's great. Thanks, Walt. Can you hang out with us? And we're going to
Sure. Talk
to Sandy now. So, Sandy, we keep hearing great things about you both from Diana and from Walter.
Well, thank you. And we're not losing the Texas connection.
Oh.
When I was five, I lived in San Antonio.
Oh, that's right.
My dad was stationed at the Air Force Base there, and my little brother Ken was born there.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So there's still some Texas going. It's all around the table.
It's all around Texas.
Where's your Texas, Vanessa?
You know what? I've got some family that lives in Texas.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So some extended family.
You're Texas?
I'm not, although I sound a lot like I am and have been accused of it before, but I grew up a Dallas Cowboy fan, so.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
So all that's right. Good.
Some tie, at least.
So I'm going to introduce Sandy. Sandy Weaver Carman is the owner and CEO of Voice Work on Demand. In addition to being the author of her own award-winning book, The Original MBA, Sandy assists clients in turning their audio into products, as well as creating audio versions of their published books, helping them produce a revenue river. Sandy has worked with both Diana and Walter in getting their audio products completed. So welcome, Sandy.
Thank you.
So first of all, congratulations on the awards for The Original MBA.
Wow, thank you very much. That was, all three of them shocked me.
So tell our listeners what those awards are.
Okay, the International Book Awards. We were in the business motivational category, finalist, and the Indie Excellence Awards, finalist in the motivational business category, and Georgia Author of the Year, finalist in the essay category.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is awesome. So I'd love for us to talk some more about audio products. And I know that that's really, you know, one of your primary focuses is helping people create those. So can you describe what types of audio products our listeners could create to create their own river of revenue?
Well, like Diana and like Walter, I work from the problem of my clients, and I work mostly with writers and speakers and trainers and coaches, and they want products, and they have intellectual capital, and they have, oftentimes they've written books, they've written blog posts that can be turned into a book very easily, they maybe are speakers, like Diana is a speaker, they maybe do workshops, and they've got all this collateral material laying around, they just don't know what to do with it. And you can look all over the internet and people will tell you but that you should be having products to sell so that you can make money in your pajamas. But when you keep looking, there's really not a whole lot of people that do that and that specialize in that. And so that's my specialty.
Well, and I know there's a lot of ways that people can record things for products that aren't
exactly.
That aren't very good quality. So how do you... How would you tell our listeners that they would be the best way for them to record for audio that's going to be turned into a product?
I actually teach a seminar on that, and I taught it this past Saturday, and people were just shocked because they think, you know, you have to go to one of those online sites and pay a fee and to record on the online site. Well, most of the online recording sites only record at 4 bits per second, and that's terrible quality audio.
It sounds kind of like recording through a kazoo.
And you can't fix that. You know, there's a lot of things you can do in post-production that you can fix, but you can't fix poor quality audio because it's been recorded at a very low bit rate. So I teach people how to use a free piece of software called Audacity. And it's very simple to set it up on your computer. You can set it up. It's default at a 32-bit float, which is a great recording level. That's, you know, it's going to sound fabulous. Anything over 16 bits per second is going to sound really good, but it defaults at 32, so I like that. It also defaults at 128 kilobits per second save. It defaults at 44.1 as a file type, and so it defaults exactly where you want it to be, and it's a free piece of software. Is it what I use when I'm producing? No. It's a decent piece of software, but it's not a great piece of software. I use a really great piece of software, but most people who just want to produce their own products don't want to spend $500 on what I use.
Right.
You know, I need a great piece of software. Most people can get by with just a good piece of software. Audacity is a pretty good piece of software. Every now and then it'll start acting up. You close it, you reopen it, it'll work fine.
Well, and I know that you work with clients in a number of different ways. And in some cases, they bring the audio to you that they've already recorded, and you zhuzh it up.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
And then in other cases, like with Walter's case, he comes to you and you actually create the whole experience.
Right.
So can you describe the differences of that and why people might want to do one versus the other?
Well, if you have a book and it's a book that you've written, there's no zhuzhing. It's already been zhuzhed. But you can take it and turn it into an audio product. Because there are people on this planet, believe it or not, who will not ever read a book. I'm married to one.
It's just shocking to me.
I am married to one. He has Walter's book sitting on his bedside table, and I've told him how wonderful that book is, and he would love it, and he needs to read it, and he really enjoyed listening to the audio version.
I was going to say, and he wanted to listen to the audio version.
Yes, he does not read books. He does not pick up a book and read a book, but he loves audiobooks. And so if you, as an author, have written a book, you open yourself to a totally new group of people if you can offer it two ways. Again, let people choose how they want to learn. That was a very good point that you made earlier.
Well, and I know that you do professional voiceover work, and you've got a whole cadre of people that do that.
Right.
So how do people pick out, like if they want to have somebody else read their work, how do they go about figuring out who that person would be and what voice is the best voice?
Basically, they can go to my website and listen to the samples page. And on the samples page are the different people that I work with. And if a voice there speaks to them in their head, if that's what their book sounds like to them, then that's the voice to use. Honestly, it's their book. It's their project. And I even work, I was working with a professional speaker who's written a book and has promised her readers that it would be out in audio form. And she decided she was going to do it herself. And started doing it. And we started in January. And she was going to read a chapter and send me a chapter. And then read another chapter and send me another chapter. And it worked really well until chapter one. Just last week she said, Sandy, would you record this for me? I'm not ever going to get it done. It's a large, large time expense. And people who aren't used to reading aloud for a long period of time, it's a lot harder than you think. I'm always very flattered when somebody says, you know, people tell me I have a great voice and that I should be doing what you're doing. Can I do what you're doing? Because that means that voice talents make it sound easy. Right. We make it look easy. And that's an incredible compliment. So for people like that, yes, you can be doing what I'm doing, but I'm going to send you to a training school. I don't run it.
I'll just point you there.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, I point them, I find out where they are, and I know several, matter of fact, several of them are in the National Speakers Association who are fabulous voice coaches. And so I send these people to people who want to learn how to do what I do.
Well, and I know Walter mentioned that the voice that read Dusty, Moby, how impressed he was when he heard that it actually made him cry. And I actually had a similar experience. When I heard that initial recording that Dusty had done, I thought, wow, this
Moby was the perfect
is amazing.
Voice.
It was it was such the perfect voice for that story.
Yes. Yes. And then we used three other voices in the book, four voices total in the book. Yes.
Including Sandy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I got a story too.
Oh, cool.
It was fun.
That's cool.
She read the story about the crazy lady.
Yeah. No typecasting.
That's right.
As far as you know.
That's right. Well, and I know you mentioned some professions earlier that would be common professions where they might want audio products. Can you mention those again? What professions somebody might be in that an audio product would be particularly of an advantage to them?
Writers, speakers, trainers, and coaches all need to have products on their website because they spend a lot of time writing in airplanes or driving down the road. They've got all this intellectual capital. In a lot of cases, they have a ton of recordings of themselves doing programs. Those can be taken and turned into products very quickly. Taking an hour-long seminar or an hour-and-a-half-long seminar or teleseminar or the audio from a webinar and turning it into a product is easy. I clean up, enhance, and romance them. It's a three-step process. So I clean them up. I go through and I take out everything that doesn't belong there. If we're talking about a teleseminar, if somebody flushes the toilet, that does not need to be on the final recording. If somebody's dog is barking, that doesn't need to be there either. The dings when somebody joins or leaves, that needs to not be there. So I clean all that stuff up. Then I go in and I enhance it. And in a lot of cases, a speaker has gone over really well in an auditorium, but the audience isn't mic'd and you can't hear them. So it sounds like the speaker's making all these great points and they're flopping. So you go through and you take tiny little spaces, the spaces where the speaker made a comment, the audience reacted, you take the audience reaction and you raise the volume on it to the point where you're not increasing the background noise to the point where the listener hears it, but you're increasing the audience to the point where you actually feel they're part of the program. And that makes an amazing difference in the way it makes the speaker sound, because it makes it sound like the audience is very engaged, which they were. Now you just hear it again on the program. And then we romance it. We put intros and outros and music and set the speaker up as the expert. And on the outside of it, you don't make the speaker do their own sales work. You do the sales work to get all these people who are listening to the audio to go to the speaker's website. So
even if they have product that maybe has been recorded at not an ideal frequency,
it can be made to sound better.
You can still make it sound better and make it into a product. And then once they learn the right type of recording, then they can be even better.
Yes,
from
exactly.
The ones from now on.
Exactly.
That's great. So, Sandy, how can our listeners find out more about you and your services and also about the Original MBA?
They can go to my website, which is voiceworkondemand.com. And you can just Google Voice Work On Demand or Voice On Demand or Sandy Weaver Carmen. It'll all get you there. You can even spell my last name wrong and it'll still get you there. It's like Diana is boo her. I'm car man, not men.
Car man.
Car man.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the English spelling.
Well, thank you so much. And we've got a few minutes to open the mics for everybody. So, Andy, do you have any questions for Diana, Walter, or Sandy?
Yeah, what I'd like to ask, because I think a lot of coaches and consultants and speakers deal with this issue, is you think about putting something into print or audio. You're going to write a book. And Diana, with 46 in print, maybe you definitely have had some experience with this. There's this mindset that if I put something down and say, this is the way to do X, whether it be sales, communication, et cetera, what if that principle or the viewpoint of that changes into the future and you're committed to a stance from a book or an audio? How do you handle that?
I make sure that when I start, the publisher knows in the proposal that this is my thesis that I'm starting with. But that may change as I move through the book. And it frequently does. Not generally the whole thesis of the book, but in a chapter, I may start off saying, this is the point I want to make. But as I get into the research, I interview people, or I talk to some clients and case studies that I want to use, it may change. And the publisher's good with that. They just are interested in your main central topic of the book. And
well, let me clarify that
learning,
a little bit. Diana, let's talk about over time. I mean, I get it as you're writing the book, what about you write a book about sales and you go, the proper way to sell is to, approach the client, develop interest, get their attention, and you kind of go through some of the AIDA type stuff or whatever. Maybe you're the guy who wrote the ABC book on sales, and now that mantra is no longer accepted in the marketplace, but here you are with this book out there that's kind of pigeonholed you into a way of doing things. How can you escape that trap or avoid it ahead of time, or does that even matter and you can always reverse your position?
That's wonderful. It's wonderful because it becomes very controversial. I think Tom Peters is one of the first ones I remember who did that. I can't remember exactly which book he wrote, but it starts off something to the effect in the first chapter of the preface, everything I told you last time was all wrong. And you, immediately you've captured the attention of everybody who bought your last book. Because, you know, they were following you as the master, and all of a sudden you said, forget everything I told you, it's all wrong, and they're going to run out and grab that next book to say, why? You know, what should I throw out the window? So anytime you can be controversial, even if you're controversial, the controversy is over what you said previously. That's a great media hook. And so I don't see that as a problem at all, because we're all growing. We're all changing because current events change, problems change, issues change. That happens all the time.
So, Andy, you can see why Diana...
Even politicians change.
That's right. You can see why Diana has sold 4 million books is because she's able to turn everything into a positive.
I like it.
To her advantage. That's great. That's great. Well, we're just about out of time. Does anybody have any last comments before we go?
What a fun little round table you got here. And Diana, I wish that you could be in the room with us, but it was great to have you on the phone.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Hey, I'll throw one more controversy out there just before we get off, since we're in all Texas today, right?
That's right.
So what is barbecue? Beef or pork?
In Texas, it's mostly beef.
That's right. So I just wanted to see how hard you'd argue that today, because you're in pork territory here.
Yes, I was going to say, it's the sauce.
And there's only one good Texas barbecue place in Atlanta. It's down at Little Five Points. It's called Fox Brothers.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with Diana here. Diana said it's about the sauce. That's important, too. For all our northern listeners, barbecuing is not hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill.
That's right.
That is not barbecuing. That is grilling.
There you go. And I think you can never have too much sauce. A little extra sauce is always good for me.
Now, see, I'm a dry rub girl.
Really?
We eat the sauce. What goes under it doesn't really matter that much.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, and our clock is on us, so we welcome your comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for co-hosting and producing our show today. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, you always make it easy.
And thank you to my guests, Diana Bohr, Walter Lawrence, a.k.a. T.W. Lawrence, and Sandy Weaver Carmen. Diana, can you please share your contact information again with our listeners?
Yes, it's Boer, BOOHER.com.
Excellent. And Walter, how can people get your download?
At ProjectDusty.com.
Great. And Sandy, how about you?
Sandy Weaver, Carmen. You can just Google that or go to VoiceWorkOnDemand.com.
And they can come sign up for your River of Revenue newsletter.
Revenue River, yes, the Revenue River Club. And I have a new ebook that I just did.
Oh, excellent.
And if you sign up for the Revenue River Club, you get the first two chapters free.
Cool. I love a bargain.
Yeah.
That's cool. So
I should say, we do have a giveaway as well. If you go to the creatingpersonalpresence.com, you can download the first chapter, or communicatewithconfidence.com, you can download the first chapter of those books as well.
Great. So listeners that go to any of our guests' websites today get a free download.
Freebies.
That's cool. That's very cool. So thanks, everybody. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week. Tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now and inviting them to listen live next week or download some of our previous shows? Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern at rightherightnow.businessradiox.com or download the MP3 version of all the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I'm guest host Vanessa Lowry. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right here, right now.